everyone, welcome back to A Life of KG. I hope you're all having a fantastic week. Today I am so excited to be hosting this podcast with Paul and Tuscany from Integrity Lash in the USA. I have been following these guys for a while now. They have a podcast called Lashcast Podcast. If you haven't heard of it, check it out. It's obviously industry based. They do amazing interviews. It's really motivating. So go and check it out. So that is Lashcast Podcast. They had a salon, which is called Integrity Lash, which was a 7-figure salon. And it was huge in California. So we're going to go and talk about the salon. And they also are speakers in conferences, and they have recently launched the LashCon conference, which is the first ever business focused lash conference, which is going to be taking place in California in October. So we're also going to be touching base on that too. So super excited, and I hope you guys learn loads. So without further ado, here they are.
Hey guys, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
You bet. So very excited.
Yeah, so excited. And I'm so glad you guys said that you've come on. So can you introduce both of yourselves and explain exactly what you do?
Yeah.
A lot of people wonder that. But go ahead, Tess, you start.
I'm Tessany Lubers. I do lashes. We used to have a salon called Integrity Lash.
13 years.
Yeah. We recently closed that. So now we used to have a staff, but now it's just me solo. But we're also, you know, so I do lashes every day.
There's this thing, we have a podcast.
Yeah, we have a podcast.
And we've been doing training. We've taken a little hiatus on the training right now while we're in transition. But for me, for a long time, I worked in the film industry. And then Tuscany got so busy with the salon back in the early 2000s. I think 2011, it just got unbearable. So she asked me to join a team. And so I joined on and helped with all the stuff she hated to do, which is pretty much managing, paying the bills, ordering, all that fun stuff.
All the administration.
Yeah, anything had to do with working at a desk and doing paperwork. Really, really fun stuff. So she brought me on to do that. And I took over that. And then, you know, just about 2.5 months ago, we closed the salon, and we'll get to that probably a little bit later. But since then, basically, I'm homeless and I walk the streets at night. And
stop it.
Okay. But I basically now am working on our new stage or a new phase for us. And I'm mainly working on our podcast and our upcoming LashCon, which is a lash focus or business focused lash conference, as well as other projects, which we are probably not going to get into too much because we're still trying to figure out which one to launch. But yeah, things, a lot of changes in our life, really. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. A year ago this time was much different than today.
Wow. You guys are so busy. How do you also find it working together as husband and wife?
You know what? That's the best part about it. I really love it. I really love working with you. When we were younger, when we first got married, we had this dream of working together. It was just something that we talked about. We actually thought we would have a restaurant business or something like that, you know, something where we just serve toast or something.
Yeah, that's a booming business, to serving toast. No, I think we were really hopeless romantics, and we had this really beautiful idea one day. If you don't know Santa Barbara here in California is like one of the most, I think, amazing places to live. We used to go there. It's kind of like the French Riviera as the comparison, I guess, people the west of here in California. And it's this beautiful place to go. And we thought, I know, we'll own this little cafe and I'll be this famous writer, because, you know, I wanted at that time to be a screenwriter and, you know, for Goonies 5 or something. And so we were really, I'll just be a writer and then we'll have this cafe. And that in the mornings, we'll open it up and serve coffee and whatever and toast, I guess. And then we just, you know, relax and never work again, I guess.
That was just a romantic idea.
And then that didn't quite happen.
It's not that we were pursuing that. We just kind of talked about it.
Yeah, right? Idea of in our 40s. We thought by then I'd make so much money writing that we could retire and do something fun and relaxing as running a cafe, which I guess I didn't know what was relaxing, but that sounded fun.
I know.
So, yeah, so we... I don't know. For me personally, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. No. I was going to say that working with you has been the best thing and really is the most fun thing for us to do, because I get to hang out with my best friend. And I know we've been married for over 25 years and we've had our ups and downs. I won't say it's all been roses. We've had, so I was like, what, 12, 15 years ago, there were some pretty rough batches.
Oh yeah.
But we always, even when we were fighting and weren't getting along as well, we still liked being together, which was the weird thing. We like, we'd still joke. We still have fun. We'd just be like, oh, but I hate you right now.
Yeah.
But we worked through those things and it's been a blast. I mean, I really do love waking up. In fact, we got rid of our second car because we really didn't need another car because we drive to work. We do everything together and we're paying all these extra bills for two cars. So I said, what the heck, let's just have one. And scale back and work together. It was really quite easy to do.
You know what I love about it the most is I love being a team. And even though we have different responsibilities and there are stretches of the day that we're not seeing each other, it's like every time we connect, I'm checking in with him. How are you doing on this? How are you doing on that? He's checking in and supporting me. And it's like we're a team. We're yeah. united. And I love that.
And I find it's really, I don't want to say it's not convenient. It just always seems to be, when one of us needs the other one, it tends to always be that way. So if she has a bad day, then I'll be having a good day and I'll be there to pick her up. And when she's and I'm having that bad day, she's like, hey, it's okay. You'll get along. You know, it doesn't always 100% work that way, but it tends more to be like that. And it's kind of nice to have knowing that we have someone there always for you to kind of lift support you up when you. Things are bad.
Because,
man, as you know, running a salon is not easy. And there's just lots of lows and a lot of hard times where you're just like, oh, crap, I just don't get it.
Lots
just
of fires you have to put
in. Yeah, and you're dealing with people and you're managing expectations and you're trying to be fair always and trying to do the right thing, but you make mistakes and then you have to, thankfully I have a partner that, for me, we could always bounce off each other ideas, solve together, support each other, cry together. And that was a blessing. I know it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, I like my husband at night. That's great. But, mm-hmm. Day, I need some privacy. I need some my own time, and I'd like to be my own person. And I guess we're so dysfunctional that it works well for us. Or no, it's just really convenient. It's just a blessing.
That's so so lovely. I absolutely love that. So touching on to the salon, you've obviously mentioned the salon a few times. You guys were in business for 13 years, which is such a long time. Congratulations.
Thanks.
How did you, tell us a little bit about the salon and why did you decide to actually start the salon in the first place?
Well, I'll speak as Tessney just pointed her fingers at me. So mm-hmm. You go. I guess I'll try to answer. The reason why we started was basically, it's like a pyramid or a bunch of dominoes that kind of all happened. Tusney, when we first got married, went to beauty school and just while we actually were engaged, got her license and then started working in the beauty world inside everything from makeup sales to esthetician to working with plastic surgeons, actually worked front desk at a salon for a couple of years. And so she had all that background and such. But when we had our first child, she stopped working for a while and really for about 7 years, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Either work part-time or not at all.
Yeah.
And I was working, but then I got laid off, which was a hard time for us. And we didn't have any income and it was just a hard time.
It was dire.
Yeah, it was pretty dire.
Dire.
And so Tusney at that time decided to go get a job and start working again was with plastic surgeons and did that for a short time.
As an esthetician.
Esthetician, yeah. As a surgeon. She was a surgeon back in those days. And she, that's why she said, good, putting the lashes on. So precise. But she basically went to a trade show actually in 2005 and saw this thing called eyelash extensions and was like totally like came home excited, like, oh my gosh, I just saw the future and it's lashes and it's going to be the biggest thing in the world. Everyone's going to be talking about it. Everyone's going to want it. And so she went quickly to her employer and said, it was a med spa at that time. And she was like, we're going to do lashes. And they said, no, we're not. We don't see it. We don't get it. And so no one wanted it. So Tusty at that time decided to go on and start working for a national company, as a trainer to learn lashes because no one would pay her to do lashes because no one knew what they were. So she started working as a trainer and training other people how to do lashes, which we thought that was funny because she didn't know how to do lashes really that well.
I know, it's really funny.
And then she just decided while doing that she really wanted to learn how well, last was last, because the one thing about training is that you don't ever get to see the same people back to back. Like, you just do their lashes once or do a student, and then they would leave, and then you would never see them again. And Tustin was like, well, how did they last? How did they grow out? How did they, all these other things. So she finally decided to start her own lash salon and just work for herself. She left her job, started doing mobile, which was crazy. I would help her out. Actually, back then, I was still working, but I was self-employed. So I would actually show up at the house with this kit, a table, a steamer, a cabbie, and all this other equipment, because she would do facials usually first, and then she'd get free lashes afterwards, because the clients would never ask for lashes because no one knew about them in 2005 and six. And so out of that grew a demand over time. Over about 3-4 months, she got busy enough to open her own place. And then after that, after a few years of doing lashes and working basically 6-7 days a week, 10-12 hour days, she hired her first team member in 2009. And it was like, there was no like mission. There was no goal. There was just like, oh, we're busy. Oh, we should hire someone. Yeah. Oh, this, oh, we should get a bigger place. Oh, this, like at the time, again, 2006, 2007, 2008, there were like, you know, 15 people doing lashes in LA. I mean,
we were flying by the seat of our pants. I mean, it seemed like there was enough business. And I mean, in fact, the biggest problem that we had was explaining what it was that we, what it was that eyelashes were, you know?
Yeah. No one knew what lashes were. No one cared, actually. Yeah. I mean, people would yawn if you start explaining what it was. So her best technique was just to do it. Like, just sit down, let me put these lashes on you. You'll love them. Trust me. And of course they did. Now, that back in those days, they were so sparse, right? I mean, we have early pictures.
I know. It's really like, funny when you look at your old pictures and you think that you were like the bomb. And you look and you see how like one or two lashes is on there. And you're like, wow, I'm so proud of that.
People paid me for that. I mean, people paid you back in the days, like $300 for a new set back when you would do like 15 lashes per eye, whatever it was.
Well, that's why I say to new people, it's like, hang in there. Just, it doesn't happen overnight, but hang in there. You're going to improve.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no grand plan, but it was just almost sound necessity just to pay the bills. And then it just kind of grew and grew. And so, well, she had to hire me in 2011 because she got so busy and couldn't manage anymore the staff and do lashes. And she really liked doing lashes more than managing. So that's when I came on, and then we kept on going all the way till 2013 till 2019 when we had to close the salon, which we can go into that, I guess, too, if you want.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So me and Tuscany, we've actually started lashing at the same time then. So I remember how it was. Yeah, I started lashing that year as well.
I remember those days.
Back in the days when you did like almost like wrestle people in the chair and say, you will love these.
No, these are individual. Yeah.
It's so amazing how far it's come. And then I love that you like would give free lashes away to your facial clients just to get them. That's brilliant.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't want to call it lash, have lash in the name because again, people didn't know what it was. So
no one was typing in Yelp for lash.
Once they were in the chair, they were my captive audience. Like, you're going to have this.
Well, we were called Integrity Skin in the beginning.
Yeah.
And the reason why we're called Integrity Skin.
Oh, well, I wanted to protect the integrity of the skin.
Yeah. And it just translated really easily. Then we stopped because we did facials and lashes. We went to Integrity.
Yeah.
And then around 2011, we went to Integrity Lash.
Because people understood it then.
Yeah, people understood what it meant. And it made sense because we also want to protect people's integrity
of their lashes
too.
Yeah,
so it kind of went over real perfectly and became our name. And we were really proud of that name because it really stood out in the sea of cute names because everyone had cute, lashy names. And we had this weird, virtue name. So I felt like it was a name you could trust. It was a strong name. It wasn't girly, really, in a sense. And so it helped us stand out, which a lot of those names are great, too. But we always were looking for ways to differentiate ourselves. And by having a name like Integrity Lash, it definitely didn't sound like any other common names like Wink Lashes or Girly Lashes or Fluffy Lashes or what like that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Which are fine. We're always looking for ways to be different when we built our salon. We had made decisions a long time ago to just be very, very intentionally different from the way we applied lashes to how we ran our salon to our everything. There wasn't anything that we're like, oh, that's what everyone's doing. We should do it too. It almost was like a badge of pride. If that's what everyone is doing, then we will do it differently.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you'll say successful.
It really was. Yeah, that was one of the big reasons because everyone else was trying to copy other people. And Tustany was always kind of this innovator, thinks outside the box. We do things that, if you listen to our podcast, that really, I think, are counter what the industry would teach. Like Tustany back in the days, what way before anyone ever talked about it, was gluing right down to the base, was attaching the whole extension to the whole lash, because that gave you more mechanical fit, which actually allowed the lash to grow out longer and would last longer. So our clients were going 4 or 5 weeks with good looking lashes, not just 2 or 3 weeks. And that would allow us again to say, you know, when you come to Integrity Lash, you can go a month with trim appointments. You wouldn't have to go 2 to 3 weeks, yeah. Which again, you know, some people would say what we were doing or are still doing is controversial and would say, oh, you can never do that. But, you know, I just think that's because someone else told them they can't. It wasn't because someone, you know, they've read somewhere or studied scientifically, it says you can't do this or shouldn't do this. It's just preference. And that's where we've always come to the table saying, look, lashing is so new. Let's stop being so dogmatic about things and say this you can or can't do. Why don't we, you know, open the possibilities and be creative and allow
Let's
people
push
to
push the boundaries of what we can do and what's possible. One of the hallmarks of our style or our business at Integrity Lash was that it was subtle and it was nuanced. It doesn't mean that we couldn't do like big lashes.
Yeah.
But I figured everybody's doing big lashes and you can get big lashes very defined on any corner. So what I wanted to do was provide something that was much more nuanced,
yeah.
And much more authentic looking. And that actually became our hallmark. Most of our clients or clientele was a little bit older, a little bit more
affluent. Hard to reach too, by the way. They don't do social media.
Yeah, it's true. They don't do social media. A lot of like executives from Hollywood, like they live in Pasadena because it's kind of it still has a feel of a big city, but it's more, I don't know, normal.
It's not as weird as Hollywood and
so
Beverly Hills and all that.
So a lot of people raise their kids and, you know, live in Pasadena.
The schools are great too.
Yeah, so we kind of catered to that San Marino, which is also like a very affluent. It's like the Beverly Hills of
the San Gabriel Valley.
Mm-hmm. And so being able to provide those, that specific clientele with something that's very authentic looking, it worked out really well for us. But on the downside, the hard part about doing something like that is because it's so nuanced, it's all about the fit. It's all about the smallest things and training, and building a staff to, meet those specific needs was a lot more challenging.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't hire someone and just put them on the floor. We usually took 3 months to train someone before they'd be on the floor. And that would be someone who had a year experience. We only hired people with 1 year experience, never newbies or right out of beauty school. So it would take 3 months. And because of that, it was really hard to replace staff if we ever lost someone, because it would take 3 months to get a new person up and going. And, you know, most staff didn't usually give us, oh, by the way, in 3 months, I'm leaving.
Yeah, it was always, like, I'm out.
Yeah. You know, we had a couple, like a note at the table when you shoot, we walk in the salon. Oh, here's a note. Oh, I wonder what it says. Oh, I just quit. Oh, awesome. It's like,
and I hate you.
No, yeah. And I hate you, by the way, or, you know, or I've just moved on to new things, whatever it was. Yeah. And it didn't always give you a lot of notice. And so, you know, we had some, I mean, we had one gal give us like 6 months notice, which we loved her to death for that, but not normally. That wasn't the norm. And so it was hard to replace people and keep things moving. That was, I think, one of the difficulties of our style and our technique and our approach.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, go get another gal in there and throw in a chair and keep going.
It was very hard to replace. It was a hard model.
Yeah, it was a hard model to scale. It was okay for 2 or 3 clients. But once we got the 13, you know, staff doing lashes and you lose someone, it was much more, it took us sometimes 3-6 months to find a team member to replace them, because we were very, very, very selective, very picky. And our clientele was very high end. And we, again, because we had chosen to go a different path, we couldn't just quickly regroup and get new people if we needed someone, because of the technique, the style, and the type of clients we have were so different than, I think, again, just trying to be an average salon. We catered to this very high-end elite group. We also had to make sure we had the right person that could handle that type of client and be professional and such. So I don't know, we've kind of gone off the beaten path here. I'm not sure. We'll just keep talking if you want.
Yeah. No, that's I know how hard it is finding staff. It's the hardest thing ever. And especially when there is that 3 month training period as well, that's even harder when someone lets you down and has to leave. So it's very, very tricky. It was part of, obviously, one of staffing is one of the biggest struggles in business. Is there anything else that you find was like your biggest struggle in business? And do you think that's common to most salons that you talk to?
You know, I think one of the hardest parts of the salon is the leadership. And really learning how to be a good leader. That's something that we didn't know in the very beginning. We just thought that you could even just like put something on a memo and you could lead that way, you know, and expect people to read it and understand.
We called it leading by memo. Yeah. We would post in our wall or break room, by the way, here's a new policy or here, how you should do this or that. And it was just stupid because no one would read it.
That's not leadership.
That's
you
not
know?
Leadership. No.
And so we really had to regroup. We actually became a team-based salon, not just commission. Team-based is a different kind of culture where
it's a structure and systems that allow you to pay your staff hourly instead of off commission, which is much more manageable budget-wise. Like for a salon owner, you're able to actually control your budget when you know exactly what you're going to pay your team at the beginning of the month, as mm-hmm. opposed to commission. You have no idea. You have to pay 40, 50, 60% or more, and it's unsustainable and unprofitable for every salon that does it. There's very few salons that are able to pay their bills when they pay anything over 50%. They're usually robbing Peter to pay Paul and doing all sorts of shell games. So yeah, but getting back to the leadership thing, I think that is the number one problem in our industry as far as running the salon, if you're going to run it beyond yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a real broken down system right now where we have trainers going out and teaching people, hey, you should do lashes and you should run your own business too. And da, 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 da. And just, you know, you just got a beauty school. Who cares if you don't have any experience, no training, no mentorship, no leadership skills. That's okay. You should be a lash boss.
And you should be making 70% commission.
Yeah, and you should be making 70% commission. Good luck. That's impossible for any salon to survive that unless they have a very active training program or lash
that's supporting
them to do it. And basically they get told to go do all this stuff and because they don't know any better, they do. And then what happens is then they get like testing. Then you hire someone because you're busy but you have no training, no background. You're like 22, 21, 20, whatever it is. Maybe it's your second career or you're 35, whatever it is, but you've never had leadership training. You never had any business building skills or anything like that. And it creates a problem because once you start hiring, you don't really realize what you don't know yet. Mm-hmm. And that is you have to be able to lead people. And leading people isn't telling people what to do. That's not leading. Yeah. Leading is building a company that inspires, that encourages, that lifts up others, that where you help others get their dreams and reach where they want to go. And that's leading. So you find out you have to learn to listen a lot as a leader, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you don't learn that again. And no one teaches that. You just have to, you're going to have to learn it the hard way like we did. Yeah. And this is the area where I think we're hoping, I call it like, this is version 3.0 or 4.0 in the lash industry. We've been around long enough to see kind of phases in the industry. And I feel like we're going into this new phase where there's a lot more focus. We're beginning to see focus on business development, leadership development and such, because I think people have been around long enough, like you, Katie, who've seen, you know, that there's things lacking in our industry. And I think that's why you see podcasts popping up now. And I think that's why you see Tara Wallace with Lashpreneur, you know, popping up. And you see what we're trying to do at LashCon. We're trying to help people, equip them so they're going to be able to become better leaders and have systems and have ways of doing business that actually help others reach their dreams and grow and become the best version of themselves versus when you're just working by yourself. You just care about yourself. You have no one else to worry about. And
you're not accountable to anybody else.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's no one looking up to you. So it's okay. It's really easy. But I think a real big issue is that leadership skill. And it's why we have had so many issues over the years. I think was we would make major gaffes in leadership.
Oh yeah. And it's like, it's not, I want to say you're experimenting on people. It's like you have the best intentions, but when you mess up, it's like that affects the relationship. And it's like, oh, you know, then you have to look back at, you know, in that relationship and say, I'm really sorry. I blew it, you know? And that's hard to recover if you've broken trust with somebody, if you just get angry and you just, you know,
and sometimes when you've broken trust, it's over.
It's like over.
They will eventually become play nice with you. but mm-hmm. you've lost them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can see in their eyes, you can see it in the meetings, you can see it in the break room when you sit down for to eat for a second. And it's just not that same engagement, that excitement, because you've broken trust. And yeah. as a leader, I always say there's like the scale, and you can keep putting little weights on that scale, and at some point it's going to tip. And once you've tipped it, you can't get it back. It's mm-hmm. over. You've mm-hmm. you've taken or put too much weight on there and on the relationship, and it's finally at an end, and that person's just not going to put up with you anymore. And I think for that was the hardest thing to deal with, the heartbreak over that. And then when things would break down, and sometimes it was our fault, I'd say a lot of times it wasn't, or mm-hmm. the staff member would gossip or hear things and drama would ensue. And our problem is we wouldn't put the fire out fast enough. And that's where we heard always this axiom. We loved it, but we practically never lived it. Was, you know, hire slowly, but fire quickly.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't fire quickly. We always wanted to give people grace. We wanted to win them back. We wanted to
equip them to make a good decision and give them time. And
yeah.
And that was not a super good practice. I mean, our hearts were completely in the right place, but practically speaking, there were times that it really put the business in
jeopardy. And that finally actually is what hit our business is that we just weren't good at cutting things off when things had gotten out of hand, where a team member was either beginning to gossip, or a team member was coming to work bitter, or they would be coming to work late all the time. You could just see it. We used to, early, like 8-9 years ago, we wouldn't. We would be in total denial, and we'd just be like, oh, no, they've only been late 10 times. That's not that bad. You know, or they're not talking to me. They're just having a bad year. It's okay. You know, so we would just totally overlook it. But then we begin to really see the signs, and we'd start putting in systems where we do one-on-ones with people. So every month we sit down and talk. And when they wouldn't respond, or you wouldn't look in the eye, you'd be like, I'd come and tuss. I'd say, hey, blah, blah, blah is totally checked out. She is barely, you know, able to communicate anymore to us. And then we're like, okay, Tuss was always, well, it's time to let her go. And I'll give Tuss credit here. She was always like, well, no, it's time. Unfortunately, we're going to have to let her go. And I'm like, let me try to win her back.
I know. He was always the one that was like, no. It's not the way that we really see it. And
yeah, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's, I need to wear, you know, different clothes, or maybe it's my cologne, or maybe it's, you know, something. And we would try to do whatever we could, give as much grace as possible, try to win the person back. And, you know, at that point, I should have really just realized, you know, this is better. Again, as a strong leader, you would know better. Just cut ties, wish them well, bless them, leave them, have them leave on good terms. Don't say bash them. Don't tell the team anything. Just say, hey, you know, find a nice way for them to exit that will bless them, but yeah, also bless you and your team so that you can move on. And we didn't do that. And then what happens in anything, which I don't know if you've seen this in your salon, but if you leave someone in who's disgruntled, it's like a disease.
It spreads. It spreads like cancer.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have three people who used to love working here, but they're somehow at night, you know, when everyone's done, they get together and go to the bar and talk about how horrible things are. And the list continues to grow. And then the cancer grows until you finally have to fire, you know, everyone. And that's what we did back in 2017. I had fired six people in 1 year.
Yeah.
Not a lot of fun. Yeah. That was no fun.
Well, just to back up just a tiny bit, to your credit, though, one of the reasons why he was more reluctant to cut somebody out really quickly was just because you were looking at the bottom line, and you were recognizing that it was going to take a long time to replace somebody. And then we had books that were full, and there's that tension there that you were trying to honor.
We had a hard balance because you know, like I said, it took us 3 months to get someone on the floor, and we paid for that time for their salary. We paid a salary. We didn't just have them come an intern. You can't do that. Technically in California, it's illegal, but we wouldn't have done that anyways. And secondly, it's the right thing to do. If someone's working for you, even if you're training, you should pay them. You shouldn't be like, hey, you know, you're going to just learn on your own and someday be on the floor. Good luck. I mean, it's kind of typical old school beauty salon world, but that's not the right way to do it. So we would pay the trainer. So it took 3 months to train them. And then, like I said before, it takes us sometimes 6 months to find someone.
Yeah.
So we'd be having problems with staff, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's going to be like 9 months before I get someone new on the floor who could replace the person who's leaving.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say they could replace, because the person usually had 2-3 years of experience doing our work. So they were quick, they're efficient. And so it was going to be not that easy just to pull that person out and replace them. It wasn't like McDonald's where you have a person in the food line that I need someone who can do fries. It's not that easy to replace. It was much more methodical and time consuming. And because of that, we would hold on to some people till we could replace them. And that was, again, a bad decision. It would have been better to have less money, turn away clients, and keep a healthy culture together than to keep on the staff so that we could keep the clients and make a little bit more money. Because the end, as we know now, it was the end of us. Mm-hmm. And it's what killed our salon. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was tough.
Yeah. Why did you guys, if you don't mind talking about it, decide to close the salon in the end?
Well, that was the one thing we hoped you wouldn't talk about. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm kidding. We actually had a podcast on it. We're actually quite open about it.
Yeah, it's 1 hour and 45 minutes. So if you want to suffer some, go listen to that podcast and hear us talk about. And then, by the way, we don't talk about it in the real negative light. I don't think it's 1 hour and a half or 1 hour and 45 minutes of us bitching and moaning about, oh, we're slung. We lost our slung. It's really a time of us owning up to our mistakes, our part
and
of the
laying it all out.
And laying out the kind of the, what happened. So it's not, I think in short, you want to just kind of give the quick version?
Just in a nutshell, we had been struggling with a labor law lawsuit for about 2 years.
Not paying for breaks.
Yeah.
In California, you are required to pay, even when your staff is on break, you need to pay for that time. Not lunches. Lunches, they are off the clock. But in California, you have to pay for the break. So in California, you get 2 10-minute breaks. And you need to be paid for that time hourly, not commission. You can't take that day, add up the commission and divide it by 8 and go, oh, okay, they average, you know, $20 an hour, so we're good. No, it's like you do that for the commission and then you have to actually have an hourly rate in California too. And we did not have that.
Yeah. Once we recognized the mistake, we changed it. And so for the past 4 years, that was part of our practice, but
it wasn't about four, but yeah,
it was 3.5.
Yeah. It was a good period where we had made the changes, but we had openly told the team when we made the changes, which is probably was foolish on our part, but maybe not. Maybe the team knew.
Who knows?
We openly just said, look guys, we've been out of compliance for years since we started. So we are going to get in compliance and we want to pay you for breaks. Now that's so unusual at those days, 3-4 years ago. The beauty salon, no one in California was paying for breaks, but we decided to do it because we knew it was the right thing. Mm-hmm. So we openly told them, hey, we're going to pay for breaks and you guys will just need to, you know, we at that time we're team-based pay, so everyone's on hourly anyway. So it's very easy to transition. For law salons, that's harder to do when you're commissioned. So you have to start tracking hours as well as paying commission on top of that in California. It's really, I won't go to that thing. It's a complete mess now. But yeah. We're paying hourly. So it made sense. All right, just clock out. Now, what we didn't do is we didn't force them on breaks.
See, the law in California, it's a little bit tedious. Even though that we had the breaks in the schedule, as the employer, you have to enforce it. You actually have to make the staff person go on. It was part of our policy, say, you know, you can take the break.
And please do.
Yeah.
Before we actually had in the books, we even tell the client team in those days, yeah, finish a little early and start your next client a little late. Wasn't probably a smart way of putting it, but that's how we handled it. Say, look, if you have a client, you're at 2 o'clock and you are working right up with your next client right up to 2, you know, finish 3 or 4 minutes early, take a couple minutes to go to the bathroom and all that, and then start your next client maybe at 2:05. Mm-hmm. We totally changed that now. Now we would have the client, you know, the team member take the break at 2 o'clock and start their next client at 2:15. Mm-hmm. And that way it would be in the schedule. But even when you did that, you still legally have to show that you did take that break. You can't just say, well, we had breaks. You actually have to show that you did. And our team knew that they, you know, even if they did, it was hard for us to prove that they did. Mm-hmm. And actually we see this in California. We always wondered why this is the way it is. You'll be a store and it'll be like 3 grocery clerks and long lines. And a manager will come up to one of the men, people goes, you need to go on break. And that person will get up and leave.
With a real long line behind
them. With a long
them.
Line. I'm like, wait a minute, there's long lines here. You can't leave right now. Where are you going?
And as customers would be like, oh my gosh, that's terrible, terrible customer service. But now we completely understand that the employer is on the hook for it if they do not physically make the staff go on break.
And in California, 93% of study was done a year or two ago. I read this article. 93% of all companies, not just beauty, are not compliant with labor law in California, which pretty much means everyone can be sued and will lose in court. And the employee doesn't have to pay a dime. The labor board will, there's a thing called the labor board in California, and they will represent you and will sue the employer for damages. And in our case, that you can go back 2 years and do that. In our case, they decide to hire a lawyer. And when you hire a lawyer, you can go back 3 years. So you actually get more money. And the lawyers will do it pro bono and get paid out once, kind of like an injury a lawyer, get paid out based upon the settlement amount. So they basically sued us for missed breaks. And then they threw in some other things like, I didn't know this, California, you have to take your lunch break before your fifth hour. If you don't, you get what they call a lunch penalty. And this is the same thing with breaks. When you get a lunch penalty, you get a 1 hour pay for that time, that for that penalty. So you'd get, you know, if you had two lunch breaks and you took your lunch late, you would get actually 2 hours extra pay on top of that as a penalty. Now imagine doing that for 2 years, and it adds up to thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars quickly. And then you multiply it by, in our case, seven people who decided to get in the lawsuit. Sadly, a couple of them were our friends, we thought. But, you know, when there's a chance to make money, I think people, you know, jump on board. And it's like, you know, friendships all aside, you know, it's money's more important. It's free, right? Money. It's free and money. We were told that some of them thought we had insurance and it wouldn't actually hurt us. It would just be paid for by our insurance, which in California, again, beauty salons are uninsurable for labor law. Because most beauty salons are out of compliance, and labor law insurance companies know this, so they're not going to insure companies that break the law all the time. So that's a stupid investment for them. So you can't get insurance. So yeah, when they sued us, coming out of all of our pocket.
So let me go back just a little bit. We one of the benefits at Integrity Lash was that we did pay vacation pay, and so one of the gals that was the ringleader that, you know, started the suit, we had a limited understanding of HR,
human resources,
the rules, and the way that we did vacation pay was that it was accrued. So if you'd been with so the gal that left,
if you've been there for 6 months, you would have vacation pay works, if it's accrued after 6 months, you'd have 5 days of vacation pay.
Right.
And after a year, you would accrue 10 days. Because in California, 2 weeks is 1 to 2 weeks is normal in most businesses. In the salon world, vacation pay doesn't exist. No one gives you vacation pay. But that was one of the things we were very proud of, is that we did give vacation pay to people. Mm-hmm. And
So what happened was when she left, she asked for the vacation pay, and she had already taken the days that she had
4 days of vacation pay.
And we didn't think that she was owed anything else. But the mistake that we made was that on the paycheck, if you have a line item that says vacation on there, even if you do an accrual method, by law, you're required to pay the entire year, even if they haven't worked.
Well, we weren't doing the accrual method. Our problem is that we were doing the method where we would, at the beginning of the year, I would just put in their paycheck 5 days or 10 days, depending on how long they'd been there. So we had put 10 days because she had been with us for over 2 years, and she had used 4 vacation days, and she left in May. And so I figured, oh, that's 5 months, 4 days. She got her vacation pay, and she asked for 6 more days of vacation pay. And I told her no, because I thought she had acquired all the vacation pay that she had earned. And what I didn't realize that, legally speaking, in her paycheck, it said you have 6 more days left to use of vacation pay. And I was obligated within 48 hours of her leaving, I have to pay her that by a check. And I didn't do that. And that's what sent her to the lawyer, which then got them into the whole thing. And it just spiraled. And then he told her, you need to get more people involved, because it's not enough to have one person in a lawsuit. It'll only work if you get a whole team. So that's why we had a couple friends get on board, and people went back and talked, and everyone, you know, they got their posse, and they went out and sued us. And by the way, I don't blame them. We're not mad at them. We don't think they're horrible people. I think it's part of the system. We obviously had not earned their trust, or had broken trust in certain ways, which had given them good reasons to feel that this is their right.
And they were wronged.
They were wronged. And so we had failed in leadership to do the right thing and to take care of them and to all that. So for that, they, you know, sued us, and we fought it for a year and a half or so. And it got to a point where
we just could not afford to.
And we had a bad lawyer, sadly, love her, sweet lady, but just really gave us bad advice, at least based upon two of my other friends who are lawyers who looked at the whole thing. But what the heck were you guys thinking?
What were you doing? Yeah. What did you do?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We didn't know. So in some ways, the bottom line is you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Like even in defending yourself, you've got to really do your homework in terms of, you know, picking counsel.
You're only as good as the lawyers that you hire. And we were not very good because sadly our lawyer, I mean, I would ask things and she goes, I'm going to have to go research that, which I thought was probably normal, but it really, in the end, it wasn't as normal for the type of questions I was asking. She should have known. And so it really hurt us. And we ended up, the settlement that got worked out was way too much.
It was way more than we could ever
afford. And then we couldn't get them to do a payment plan. So it just made better sense at that point after, you know, 13 years and really, you know, loving doing the podcast and loving doing the trainings and loving to do some of these new things, the business stuff that we have started doing, seeing kind of a new future for us, which we had been working on for about a year. It made sense to say, you know what, I think it's just time to wrap up. We've did our thing. 13 years is a good run. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, most people barely even done lashes for 2 years, let alone 13. So for us at this point, maybe it's time for us to put aside this part of our career and move to the next stage, which, you know, we've, you know, so far it's been actually very fun, very rewarding. And, you know, Tustany's getting to do lashes again, which is what she loves doing. And I'm basically, again, like I said, I'm doing nothing though.
Yeah. No, it was a good journey. It was, when I look back, I'm super proud of being able to, have provided those opportunities for, a lot of these women to provide for their families, to buy houses.
That
I'm super jazzed about that.
I mean, I think I always joke that Pasadena, if you want to get the best lashes in the world, you got to come to Pasadena, California, because everyone has been trained by us. It's like, it's a great group of women and they're all killing it. They're all doing great work. And while, you know, things didn't turn out long-term or I guess short-term for us in a good way, you know, we hope one day maybe this will all be reconciled and we'll be able to see these people and give them a hug and tell them, you know what?
That would be wonderful.
It was, you know, while it ended poorly, it was a big disaster and there was a lot of emotions and bad feelings. You know, we're willing to say, you know what? We totally understand your position, where you guys went and why you did it. We totally forgive you. They probably don't feel like they need to be forgiven, but for us, we need to forgive them because I don't want to stay bitter and angry and mad and be that 65-year-old man goes, you know, I used to have
a salon.
Yeah. I used to have a big salon and we ruled the world. No, I just, those damn girls destroyed it and took it from us. No, I don't want to be like that. That's not the way I am. That's our wiring. That's not the way we think. So for us, I think, you know, we want to long-term for our mental health and I think our well-being.
We to live at peace with everyone. I mean, that's just the dream, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's extremely sad what happened, but it has then made you move on to maybe bigger and better things that are going to happen in business. And I think HR is such a huge thing and a lot of salon owners aren't trained enough in HR or know the state laws and stuff like that. And they should really get, I mean, I'm sure you would agree, for people to research this now and really look, get a HR company or something involved that can help you.
Yes, absolutely. What you don't know can hurt you.
You know? And I think, and there are now, we didn't know at the time, we found this out after we knew, didn't know, but there are companies online that are your virtual HR company and they do it for very, very reasonable prices, like $100 a month. And you can have someone at your fingertips that you can either email or call and get advice. They give you forms. They tell you the law updates in your state or your country where you're located and they help you to stay on top of things. So it's even this last year we learned and we didn't, that, you know, we didn't have to deal with it because we closed, but by the end of this year, we had to have put into place a sensitivity training for sexual harassment that everyone in California now has to go through a 1 or 2 hour
sensitivity training. Five,
no, it's any employees. Oh. It doesn't matter. This is what's crazy. It used to be only 20 and more, you know, these bigger companies. Now they're saying, no, everyone, or it used to be just management. Now everyone has to do that. Also a new thing. Now this, I think there is a limit. Everyone also in California now has to have the retirement plan. I think it's five employees, I think. But you have to have a retirement plan in for your employees too. So that's a whole new thing that just started in California. And again, these are things, if you don't know, you're opening up yourself to lawsuits and chances of being sued by a disgruntled employee. And it only takes one. one person gets a little disgruntled, goes to a lawyer, and then they can drag everyone else into it. And it's really kind of scary. And people, I think a lot of owners, you know, we see all over the internet or so, or on Instagram, or like, I'm a boss, I'm a girl boss, last boss, whatever. I get it. But, you know, we're also taking on huge liabilities and chances. And we need to be a little bit smarter about it. We need to be educated. We need to get training, and we need to get that help so that we can protect ourselves. So when that disgruntled employee does come, and it will happen no matter who you are, you'll be, you know, you'll have a nice security saying, you know what, I did my homework. I hired the right people, paid a little extra for this HR help, but you know what? I'm safe. I'm good. And I don't have to worry at night about losing it all or some lawsuit.
Peace of mind, right?
It is.
Peace
yeah.
of mind.
Definitely. And then for those of you that are listening, this isn't just in America, this is UK law as well. So definitely like take this advice on board. And going back a little bit, it means that you can be an amazing lash artist or amazing at doing facials or nails or whatever it is that you might be doing, but it doesn't mean that you're amazing at business. Just because you're great at these things, it doesn't mean, yes, I'm going to open a business and I'm going to do this and that, because there is a lot of more training and in-depth stuff that's involved in running a salon and running a business. It takes
time.
And it's not just your good intentions, because a lot of times we think, oh, I really meant well. I didn't mean to harm anybody. The law does not care about your good intentions.
No.
If you know what I mean?
I wish it would. It would have been so much more helpful for me to be able to go, by the way, here's a list of all my good intentions.
Yeah.
they don't care. They just don't care. It's all about, and that's why as owners, it's so hard, because the laws change, at least in California, they change all the time, and you need to be on top of it. And ignorance is not an excuse. It's not a defense. You can't just say, well, I didn't know. Sorry. No one cares. It's your job to know. Even if you're a single, you know, you with two employees, you need to know all the laws. You need to be up to date on everything. And that's not just on HR stuff. That's, you know, then you add on lash stuff, and you add on accounting and taxes and all the other areas that you need to know. It's a tall order. And I wish we saw that more in our industry and our training with people. While it's great to be a boss, it's great to work for yourself, I wish people were much more, especially these companies that do trains, would really paint a more full picture for these young people who are getting into our industry and saying, look, guys, I know you want to be your own boss. I know you want to have your own hours, and that's great. But you know what I want to encourage you to do first is go first, work, and be mentored for a while. Learn underneath a good company. Now, maybe that's the hard part. Maybe there's just not enough good companies out there, but you need to go work and be trained, learn from someone who has been in the trenches longer than you, get that mentorship, and then go and pursue. And by while you're doing that, by the way, read books, listen to our two podcasts, go to LashCon, go to other business conferences, and learn how to be a good business operator, learn how to be a good leader, so that when this all happens, it doesn't spiral out of control so quickly, and it could be the demise and the end of your business.
Because the lash industry is relatively in its infant stage, there's not as much of those resources of people who have gone before and done these things like there have been in the hair world.
Yeah, the hair
right?
world's been a million years, I think. Mm-hmm.
And then not just hair, just like you said, other business things. So it's important to research these things from an industry that's been providing these for a longer time.
And that's what we do. We always were looking at the hair industry to see how did they operate? How did they function? Like team-based pay that we put in place back in 2013 was really at that time, we were like the first lash salon to bring that type of structure into our company. That was solely just hair salons and spas at the time. Mm-hmm. And we brought that into the lash world. And thankfully now, you know, Shelby from Lash Boss Radio is doing it. And there's other salons across the United States are beginning to do it too, and really find a lot of relief and all that. But it's because we looked at the hair industry. That's where we found those solutions and those ideas, because they've been around a long time. We go to a conference called Serious Business in New Orleans every January. It's amazing. It's some of the top minds in the beauty industry and just in the business world in general too. Come and download for 2 days all these amazing ideas, concepts. And we've been going there for like 5-6 years, learning how to become better leaders, how to be better business people. And that's something we want to call people in our industry, is that just because you have boss behind your name doesn't mean you're a leader. Doesn't mean you know how to run a salon, doesn't know how you mean know how to manage a team. You just have a title. Now you need to grow into that title, and you need to become that great boss, a great leader, but it's not going to happen by accident. It's going to happen by intention. You're going to have to really be purposeful in what you read, what you learn, how you think. All these type of things need to fall into place if you want to be a boss. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you really are what I always hate the term boss personally. I think boss has got a negative connotation. I always like to say like a servant leader. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to be. I want to be that person that serves my team. I'm not there to tell my team what to do. I'm there to serve and empower them to be able to do what they need to do.
One of our thought leaders, our favorite one is Simon Sinek.
Yeah.
And he talks about leaders
eat first.
No.
Oh, I was kidding.
Leaders eat last. And it's kind of like what you're just talking about. It's that servant heart. Basically, because you're leading, you take the brunt of the job to
responsibilities serve, yeah. to control, manage. And by the way, as you probably know, Katie, we're the last ones to get paid too, right? Yeah. I mean, owners are not the first to get paid. They're the last to get paid. If there's money in the bank account, you get paid. And that's something, again, a lot of people don't get when they think they're going to own their own place and they have staff. They think, oh, I'm going to make all this money. I'm a millionaire. And then like at the end of the month comes and go, holy crap, I had to borrow, $2,000
and steal
from a credit line just to make payroll this month. What happened?
Yeah.
And that's, that is so normal, by the way. I don't know how many owners secretly pull me aside and go, I don't get paid barely anything. My staff thinks I'm making millions and I barely can pay myself. And I said, welcome to the world of commission, because that's what the commission world creates. You have no idea if you're gonna get paid or not. And the only way you really do get paid is if you know you're doing work on a chair or in the room doing lashes, or if you have training. And that's why I think trainings are so popular with a lot of salons, because, hey, at least I know I can make $5,000 on a weekend teaching some gals lashes, because I'm not making any money in my salon. Mm-hmm. And that's a normal way our industry is set up, and it's dysfunctional and broken. And that's why commission has to end. Yeah. as a way of doing things.
In California, it actually has.
Yeah.
It's not legal to just pay commission. You can pay commission, but you have to pay double minimum wage.
Double minimum wage and add commission on top of that, which no salon's doing. That's
I'm really hoping in the UK that comes into play, because at the moment there is the whole employed, which I think is similar to team-based pay, and then the rent in chairs and commission. And I am totally against commission, and all of my girls are employed or in all of our salons. But it's a massive thing. And when I do my business mentoring for salon owners, the biggest thing is most of them are doing commission with girls, and they wonder why they haven't got no money. And it is because of commission girls.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can't predict what you're going to.
It's not a line item that you can predict. As a business owner, you need to be able to sit down and go, every month I'm going to pay this much for rent, this much for my water, my electric, and this much for my insurance. And you need to be able to say, I'm going to pay this much for payroll, and not be going, I hope I'll get this much. Because with the commission, you don't know, because it's a sliding scale. Because if a person does $10,000 in business, let's say, and they get 50%, and then it drops down. They had a great month. Let's say they did $12,000 in business. Well, now that 50%, which was $5,000, goes up to $5,500, and it goes up. So you have no way to really plan it. For us, we were able to predict, because we really understand that when you're running a salon, you're selling hours. You're not selling lashes or hair or whatever. You're selling hours. So if you understand how many hours you have to sell, and you know what your costs are per hour, you can actually calculate with very clear accuracy how much you're going to bring in every month and how much it's going to cost you. And then you can create all your budgets off of that. And so that's what team-based pay allows you to do, which gives you incredible amount of empowerment, control over your payroll, over your systems, and allows you to do other things like we had, like sick pay, health insurance,
vacation
pay, paid breaks, paid team meetings, paid trainings. All that stuff happens because I now have line items and I can control my budget because of that. But when you're commissioned, it's a total like throwing a dart at a dartboard, hoping you're going to hit the bullseye. But most of the time you don't. And at the end of the month, as an owner, you're just like, holy crap, I can't pay my bills. And the whole idea of commission too, as a side note, which I'll jump on my soapbox on this, is where this idea that I'm not going to build your business anymore, or why should I build your business, or why should I be giving you my pay?
I should be making half of everything that goes out of the salon. It's like when you go to Starbucks and the barista's doesn't think I should be making 50% of that coffee because that's my labor. the beauty industry is the only industry that
thinks
that,
like this, or like a doctor's doing surgery or something like that. I will only take 50. I need at least 50% of whatever this operation's costing. You know, no one does this, but in the beauty industry, we have this single mindset like, hey, you know, why should I work for you? You know, in fact, often employees will think you're stealing from them.
You're doing this off of my hard labor.
Yeah, you're building a business off me. Like, that's how businesses work, by the way. Everyone works in the business and builds a company, and they work underneath people who lead and manage that company. That's just the way business is. But only in the beauty industry do we think that the employees should take 50%, 60%, or 70%. You can't have payroll where 70% of all your revenue is going to pay for payroll. It just doesn't, the numbers don't add up, and employees, there's not enough money. And yeah. So people don't understand that.
Only come out, I'd say, like the last few years as well, because when I set up in business over 10 years ago, there was no such thing as commission back then.
Really? Wow. Interesting. That's in America. That's the commission's been the way it's been for since the Stone Ages.
Yeah, I mean, since the 50s.
Yeah, it's been pretty much the model, and it's still today for most part, I think, the model, or booth rental, which is really popular. And I don't know if that is out in the UK, but I know here law salons have switched over to booth rental because they're tired of managing the hassle payroll. They say, you know what, if you give me $1,000 a month for your room or your chair, we're good. And I won't even worry about you. Everything's on you now. You have to find your own clients. You have to do your own payroll. Or you have to pay your own taxes. Just give me $1,000. Basically, people in the United States would rather be landlords now than be salon owners. Yeah. So they just convert to this landlord title. They keep saying that they're salon owners. Like, no, you're not a salon owner. You're a landlord. You just collect rent now. You're not building a team. You're not building a company. No offense. I mean, God bless you. I hope you decided to make this choice because you were frustrated with the other model, but you're a landlord and you just collect rents. That's really what you are now.
Yeah, and when you are commission-based or renting chairs, you are not a team. You're not a team player. Well, you're only going to get that if you employ staff or do a team-based pay. Like,
yep.
You will gain a team and be able to build a salon brand. Without that, it's just not going to work.
Preach it, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to hear this. It's happened in the UK because we talk about team-based pay, and it's kind of like we're speaking Greek to people. They have no idea. It's this foreign language. But
well, oftentimes, even when you go to conventions and things like that, and you'll say, oh, we're team-based pay, they'll look at you and say, oh, you're those people.
Oh, you're one of those weirdos.
You know, because...
You're the controlling ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I think it's great because I think, this whole commission and booth rental is a tough road to go. If you're doing booth rental, there's just no money in booth rental, really. I know people who've done it and they literally don't make any money anymore on their salon. They just pay their rent and that's all they get, which I don't understand why you'd be in business if you literally make no money now, other than bragging rights, I guess. Tell your friends, I got a salon.
And then that's literally the only reason. I know for a fact I would not be here where the position I am now, be able to be like a single mom and still go out with my daughter and have days off with her, knowing the salon's running itself and still making the same amount of money if I was in there or not, like if it was commission-based. Like, it just wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really not. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And you have no control of your budget. And like, I love to just tag on to what you talked about, building a team. You can't build a team when you're model, when you're commissioned. The only thing that's rewarded is the person who's busy.
Yes.
So with commission, you can be busy and you could give a rat's ass about anyone else in your company because you're busy. You're like, hey, I got all my clients. I don't care if Sally next to me has no clients today. No big deal. Now with our business, with team-based pay, is if only one person's busy and you have five other people working and they're not busy, then the money is not good for anyone because the company is not generating enough revenue to pay everyone a good salary because only one person's busy. So now everyone realizes I need to get everyone in this salon busy if I want to get my next pay raise. So everyone works together as a collective to encourage each other, to support each other. And you can share team clients too. When you're commissioned, no one wants to share a client.
Yeah.
But now when you realize, hey, I'm not busy, but you know what, you should see Sally next time because she's got a couple openings I know about and she's great and she's been trained by the same people. She's awesome. I would just want, next time when you come in, why don't you see her? And then that you share clients more easily. And now everyone realizes that if everyone's sharing team members and pushing each other forward, you will make more money as a team, as a collective. And that's when you begin to get that positive momentum versus the column mentality is what we call it when you go to a commission where you just look at your column. If you're busy, you're good to go and you don't care about anyone else.
The team-based model actually builds the entire team. and makes everybody vested in the success instead of just like, I'm doing well, I don't care about you guys.
Yeah, I mean, you're a rock star. If you're in the commission world and you're busy, you're a rock star and you don't care about anyone else, and you walk in.
You don't have to serve anybody else.
You don't have to do any chores, do dishes, do towels.
She's the highest producer.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really breed a good team. It breeds resentment. It breeds people that are bitter. You know,
cattiness a lot comes out of that. It's just a real negative flow for us. So we really kind of raged against all that. And I think we're seeing a positive turn. I mean, we at LashCon, which I'm going to be here to promote, I guess, a little bit, but we will have.
We're going to talk about LashCon, actually.
Go ahead.
Do you want to talk about that? Because obviously it's kind of related to this subject anyway.
Yeah, we'd love to, because one of the things that we're really excited about LashCon is strategies is going to be, that's just the team that teaches team-based pay. They've been around for 25 years, been doing this since, the Stone Ages, and now they've picked up a lot of traction in the hair world. There are a lot of salons in the hair world that will do this model, but now we're beginning to see traction in the lash world too, which we're really excited to see, and they're going to be coming to LashCon to teach what is team-based pay. We're going to have a panel with salon owners who do team-based pay to share the pains, points, the struggles, and the victories that one has with this model, and we're really excited about it. But let's going back now to what is LashCon. LashCon is the first ever business-focused lash conference. There's been a lot of lash conferences out there. They're really cool. I know you just had yours a few months ago, and it's really exciting to see all these conferences pop up, which are wonderful, and a lot of chances for people to network, connect, and talk about lashes and get real nerdy. And try products out and all that stuff. It's been great, and it's a great evolution in our industry. But most of these that we've seen, in fact, all of them, will have a mix. Like, they'll have some classes on, you know, better techniques, how to improve your volume retention, how to do this or that. And they'll do marketing, like Instagram. You always have at least a couple people there talking about Instagram and how you can better reach your audience and so forth. But no one has just sat down and said, no, guys, we need to really talk, though, about business. And this is what I was saying earlier in the podcast, that there's this huge hole where we're missing out on people who know how to be good leaders, who know how to have good systems, good best practices to be a good manager, a good leader, and to be able to build a company with staff to do more than just survive. We want people to thrive and actually have a great company, something to strive for and inspire people. So that's what LashCon's about. It's about going out there. We're going to have three different tracks. There's a business track, because we're not going to just be in one room the whole day. We're going to have the main session where we all hang out for a few hours, have a few speakers in the plenary session, and then we're going to break, and then you're going to be able to tailor make your day. And we're going to have three sessions on the first day in the afternoon and three sessions on the second day in the morning, where you can either go take a class on marketing, a class on business, or if you're a salon owner with staff, a class about salon ownership. And so there's really a little something for everyone, and you can kind of tailor make what you want for you. And it's like a custom menu. You get to make exactly that, come there knowing what you need to get out of it so that you can meet your needs, whether you're a single operator or you're looking to hire or you're a half staff, and you're going to be able to find ways to meet those needs and scratch that itch. Scratch that itch and make yourself a better leader. And I feel like this is the beginning. Like, if you come to LashCon for the first time, hopefully we're going to open your eyes up. Guys, you're really leaders now. Mm-hmm. As a salon owner, you're a leader, and it's time to grow up. It's time to, you know, to take that next step and see yourself differently and begin to make better choices and see yourself as a leader so that you can avoid the pitfalls that are ahead of you that many of us have fallen into, and you can grow a successful salon, and we will see a change in our industry where we see more and more people really focusing on leadership and skills and systems so that we can have really powerful salons and not just be a sea of individual operators all working by themselves, driving around in their cars, doing home visits, which is not the highest level, I think, of service we can strive for.
Not in the States. It's different. I hear that in England, it's okay to have salon in your house, which is totally cool.
United States, I guess it depends on what state you're in. It varies state to state. But that said, LashCon's really here to try to meet that need and help people be equipped. And we're having speakers, not just lash people. You know, a lot of these things you'll have your plethora of people from all over the world, from Europe, from Russia, from the United States, from South America, all these speakers, and they're all lash professionals and all killing their fields, and they're mostly lash trainers. We actually decided to do it differently. We went outside and found, I'd say, half third to half of our speakers don't even do lashes at all. They're either business coaches or they work in the hair world, or they're just leaders, thought leaders in what they do. And we invited them to come and speak and be at our event and help people think differently about business and to grow up and be better leaders. And so I think for that, it's going to be a little bit different. Like if you look at our speaker list, it's not your typical line. You won't be like, oh, there's, you know, this person, that person from here and there. It'll be like, who's, I mean, I'm sure some people are looking at the list going, I have no idea who these five people are. They're just strange names I've never heard of. I hope they do lashes well. And I'm like, no, they don't do lashes at all. So it's,
but they don't need to in order to instruct you on how to have the best front desk staff you can.
Yeah. No,
definitely not. Les, I mean, it's going to be so, so good. I mean, people can buy tickets at www.lashcon.com. That's right, isn't it?
That is correct. And they are available right now for, or it's in October 19th to the 21st. So there's plenty of time to get tickets. And by the way, getting tickets from over the other side of the pond. Yeah. As I say, I can't talk all of a sudden, is actually quite affordable in the fall. It's a lot cheaper to fly to the States in the fall than it is any other time of the year. It's actually one of the reasons why we picked September, October to do this, is because we wanted to make it the best price tickets, and travel around the world is cheaper than, because, you know, everyone's summered out. Everyone's done with all their travels.
But in Pasadena in October, it still feels like summer. It will feel like summer.
It'll probably be 80s. Yeah. Maybe, you know, it can sometimes in 90s. So it'll be nice weather. It'll be sunny. It'll be warm. The rainy season hasn't started yet. What little rainy season we have. And so it's a great chance. And we're only an hour or so away from the beach. So you can come, hang out, make a 2 or 3 day visit, to see the beach, have some fun. I know Jamie Butler is going to be here speaking, and he's already planning to do his vacation with his new baby, his new family. And we're excited to have him come out and be part of it. And we're hoping to get more people from the UK. I know we have had a few signups so far, and I get DMs all the time from people saying they're going to, but I think a lot of them, it's logistics and planning and all that, but it's definitely, I think it's gonna be more than worth it. And it's not just gonna be an American thing where this only applies to Americans, how we run business. We're going much bigger picture. We're just saying these are broad principles that work in any country for any person. They're just good skills you should have if you want to run a salon.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. So exciting. I'm hoping I'm going to be there as well. So that'll be really good. Yeah, it's such a great excuse to be like, oh, this is a great business expense. Why not go to America?
Exactly. You can write it all off. I mean, wow, really? Come out here, the plane tickets write off, your hotel, and you can stay a few days and, you know, check out Disneyland, go to theme parks, I don't know, go to the beach, whatever it is you got to do. Go to Vegas. Vegas is only like three hours away. So I think Jamie's going to Vegas too. So make a whole vacation trip of it and write it all off, and then go back home and hopefully be inspired. I mean, when you get done coming to the scene, it's not just to have fun and learn, it's to be inspired and actually have practical things. And this is something that we're really, really striving with all of our trainers and teachers, instructors, is that we're not here to get a bunch of fluff and a bunch of motivational speeches. To get that on Instagram, you can get that anywhere. What we want are very practical, hands-on things that you can do today. I'm saying they have to be able to give at least minimum 3 actionable steps that they can put into their business. And they can't be these monstrous tasks. Like team-based pay is a monstrous task. Restructuring your pay structure, that takes a lot of work, and you really should have a coach to do that. But other things that you can do that, hey, you know what? I can do it in the next week. I can start this, and this would really improve my customer service. Or I can do this, and this will really help me improve my retention for clients. Or I can do this, and this will help me get better rebookings. Or whatever it is that we're doing, put that system into place, and you can grow your business and make yourself a better leader and a better business. And that's what this is all about. It's not just about rah-rah speeches, because while those are fun, we really, really want to make sure you walk away with 30, 40 practical things that you can do. Now, you're not going to do all those 30, 40, but we're going to say, look, you just got 30 new ideas that you can implement. Pick 2 and get those 2 done, and then work it down through the list as you work, check those off your list. But so it's going to be very, very practical. That's something that we're really, really big on.
We wanted the speakers to be able to deliver actual information and not just to highlight a training that they're going to be teaching where if you take the training, then you can get all the real stuff. To me, that's kind of like a commercial. So we really wanted to be able to provide actionable items.
Yeah, we're not allowing anyone to do a product pitch. I mean, they can talk about their company, of course, but they're not there to say, by the way, if you stay one day longer, you can take my class on Tuesday.
Where you get all the real goods.
Where you really get the depth of it. We've been to conferences where that does happen. And I know why they do that. It's because the speakers, no one's being paid. The airfare wasn't covered, nothing. We're taking care of our speakers. Our speakers are being paid. The airfare is being paid for, and as well as the hotel. And then, of course, we're buying breakfast and lunch for everyone. So there's all these things we're paying for. And as a result of that, you know, we're saying as an exchange for that, please, and when you go do your class, you're not going to be there just to try to get someone to sign up for your training. You're there to give them real practical things right then and there they can do. And by the way, you know, at the end, hey, say, guys, I have a great training. Here's my information. Go ahead and sign up for it. That's great. But that's not the way we're making this work. And so it's a very practical approach, I think, to allowing people to come to our, who come to our thing, will walk away with plenty of things that they can implement, not just a starter idea. Like, well, the guy gave me a part of an idea, but now I'm going to have to go take their, you know, 3-day workshop to be able to really figure out how they, you know, implement it. So that's not what we're going to be doing.
Yeah. Well, it sounds awesome. Good luck with sorting all the final details out for that. So just lastly, you guys have the Lashcast podcast, which obviously we just touched on earlier. How long have you guys been doing that? And what has been your favorite episode so far?
Oh, we've been doing it for about a year.
No. Actually, this October, which we're in August right now, will be 2 years since our first recording. Now, we recorded in October of 2017, and then we couldn't get the tracks from the place we recorded. The guy, sweet guy, was so disorganized, we couldn't actually get it. We didn't launch it till January of 2018 is when we finally launched it. It took us like 2.5 months to get it, edit it, and then post it online. So yeah, we've been doing it for, you know, almost coming up and recording in 2 years, and been actually on air for about 17 months now. And, you know, I wish I could say we were the first. There was actually one gal who beat us who did Lash Attic Radio back in the day that was online. She was the very first, as far as I know, doing Lash podcast. But outside of her, I feel like we were the, you know, thankfully kind of cool, the first to be doing it and still doing it, I guess.
Shelby started the purpose.
She started, a month or two after us. Yeah. I think it was Shelby. And so, but we don't publish as often as everyone else. I think we do two a month. And so we have about 38, 39 episodes. And what's our favorite episode? Gosh, it's really a hard one to say. I mean, be honest, me personally, talking about when we closed our salon, I think
actually that was one of my favorites.
It was just a real kind of gut check.
It was kind of cathartic to be able to talk about it and to be able to share really intimately, and it's kind of to confess, you know, where we went to our
confessional.
It's like church, right? Yeah. No, I really,
we've been absolved of our sins.
That one is a really special one that I'm really proud of. I also thought that Kelly Lovely Lashes, interviewed her. That was kind of a joke, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was just down before April Fools. We wanted to save it for April Fools, but we felt like the hype for Kelly Love Lashes might be over by that time, so we didn't march. And that was a blast because we basically
laughed so hard we almost
peed our pants. Yeah, I would speak for yourself, but no, it was basically really fun to, for an episode, be like a reality show, and just have this person on like Jerry Springer just talking about stuff that were crazy, and she had so many people fooled and so many people upset at the time that everyone thought she was for real and that she was damaging lashes or was hurting people, and to have her on to come on and defend her position and just go with it. And then get, for us, it was both a love hate thing. We had people who thought it was the funniest thing ever, and then we got emails and DMs saying this was horrible, you're promoting evil. And But it was fun. It was fun. And Kelly Love Lashes would be right up there, I think, as far as just pure pleasure and just a lot of the hype. And some people thought we just did it for the hype. It really wasn't. We felt like we did it mainly to help people understand that Kelly is not real.
Satire.
It's satire. And we felt like there were so many people upset. I was getting DMs and emails saying, help me take her down. Help me to get her removed from Instagram. And I felt like, guys, calm down. She's not real. She's having a little fun on our expense.
It's like a comic strip or something. She's just she's giving us comic relief, like Lash Funnies.
Yeah, Lash Funnies makes fun of clients. Well, Kelly Love Lashes makes fun of arrogant lash stylists.
It was.
And so it was fun. And so we're grateful that we had her on and we're able to help expose that to the public so people could stop freaking out. Instead, you could just watch her page and laugh.
Oh, that's so good. My favorite one was the one about closing down the salon as well.
Yeah, that's always fun to talk about.
No, I don't know. It just hit all those things. It's just really, really authentic. And,
it's real life. Like, you're just being real, saying how it is. Like, it was really, really touching. I love that one.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you. No, it was definitely a tough one to do. But in the end, I think, like Tessa, it was very cathartic and helped us to get over that chapter more and just get that story out there and say it and be done with it and move on. That's all good. And it's helped a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of salon owners again who reach out to us going, I'm near the end. I'm thinking about quitting. But in fact, funny enough, our episode actually inspired them to fight harder, like to hang in there. And I think it was because I don't want to be a loser like you. No, but no, they were just, I think for them, they found like, oh, it's okay. Like,
it is okay.
I do struggle. You struggle. We all have struggles.
The struggle is like normal.
Yeah.
The struggle is like all in.
And if you're successful, you're going to get sued.
Yeah, you're going
to. Now, take that as a badge of honor. If you're being sued, it's probably because you're successful and people are now envious of what you're doing. And so they're going to try to take from that because there's always someone who wants to get something for nothing. And that's a normal kind of human nature thing to do. So just expect it. If you get to a point where you're successful, and this is, again, I've talked to a lot of salon owners who are you'd see online, like they're really successful, but they're all being sued. It's not unusual.
It is so normal.
Yeah. Either by clients or by employees.
And it's not just our industry either. I mean, several colleagues that are doctors, and they've said the same thing to me. You know, if you're successful, you're going to have a lawsuit in your background.
Yeah. Just get used to it, guys. That's everyone's future.
No, you can be smart. Protect yourself.
It's just such a shame that that's the world that we live in now. It's just such a shame, but it's the way it is. But anyway, where can our listeners find you guys on social media if they want to get in touch with you about anything?
Yeah. The best way to find us is at LashCast Podcast on Instagram. That's probably the number one way. We also have Lash.com. Is it con? No, LashCon. Yeah.
LashCon.
At Lash.com. We couldn't get LashCon because someone had taken it. But Lash.com, that's our other page now that's for the LashCon trade show. It's a conference that we're having. And you can also email me. I love to answer emails and to help people out. So you can find me or email me at paul@integritylash.com. I haven't changed my email yet. It will change eventually, but paul@integritylash.com. We also have a Facebook group that's LashCast Podcast. It's private, so you need to ask to get in.
But you can get in.
We have a very low standards there, so just ask. You'll get in. So just go to the Facebook, type in LashCast Podcast. It'll pop up as a private group. Just say, hey, I'd like to join it. There we try. I'll be honest. We don't share as much as we wish we would from information from our podcast, but we do have a lot of documents, a lot of videos and things that we post in there.
A lot of resources that you can take.
That you can take for free. We have our consultation forms and other stuff
on
there.
Information on adhesives.
So there's free giveaway or stuff in there if you join, and that's a really good place to meet us. And also message us. And we have a community of people there now that answer questions for each other and such too. So I don't know if anyone needs another Facebook group. Probably not, because there's so many of them. But in case you're short on your Facebook groups to join, that's another one you can hang out with us with.
That's so cool. Thank you. I appreciate it so much, you guys, taking the time out to come on. And I know it's really, really early where you are.
It's not so bad. Yeah, but we're just not early morning people ourselves.
Katie, it's been a delight. It really has been. Thank you for having us on.
It's been a pleasure.
And to share with your listeners, and I hope it can help.
And hopefully they can understand us with our bizarre accents.
Oh, they can. It's not that bizarre. I can understand. Fine.
Yeah. We always wish we had British accents, to be honest. We're always jealous of all you guys. We're like, oh, man, I wish I had, like, a British accent.
So cool.
They're so cool. Like, we have the lamest accent in the world. And if I could just speak like John Cleese, I'd be so much cooler. But oh,
well. Well, have a great rest of the day, guys. And thank you so much.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Katie. All right, bye-bye.